because of the parade downtown. I couldn't even talk to my attorney because all the cell phone towers were being used up. That was my only point to go to was my attorney. He was unavailable at the time, but when I did get on the phone with him, it was just a real short conversation. He was like, I'm surprised, I'm shocked, this is going to cost a lot of money. And the phone died.
From the Family Life Podcast Network, this is Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. This podcast brings together timeless wisdom and practical help and hope to blended families and those who love them. Now, before we jump into my conversation with guests Willie and Rachel Scott, I'll mention that we just released the 10th anniversary edition of the video curriculum, The Smart Step Family. It's do-it-yourself, practical help for your family. And for those of you helping others, let me invite you to the Summit on Step Family Ministry, October 23 to 25, 2019, in Chesapeake, Virginia. I'll tell you about these and other opportunities a little later, but you can always just go to familylife.com/blended for more information. Now, if you're going through a custody battle, I don't have to tell you it is a very stressful experience. In part, because it requires so much of you, your time, your money, emotional energy, you're worried all the time. And one of your worries is you're wondering about your child, how they're doing, and if this is going to hurt your relationship with them. My guests today, Willie and Rachel Scott, are the founders of Better Than Blended, LLC. They've created several books and resources for blended families, and they have experienced two custody disputes. Willie and Rachel both grew up in a blended family, so when they married, they wanted their children to experience unity and oneness. Willie was widowed with three children, and Rachel divorced with two children. They added a couple more kids, so altogether, they have seven children ranging from toddler to adult. You can learn more about them at betterthanblended.com. The Scott's most recent resource is called Having Courage in Your Custody Battle. I asked them to take us inside their battles and the stress they experienced. You know, custody battles are so stressful. Willie, Rachel, with the couples that I've worked with in the past and the stories that I've watched from a close distance, I know it can be an extremely stressful journey for people. We're not giving legal advice today. We're not attorneys. We're going to point everybody listening back to a local attorney. We want to encourage you to do that. You need that as it relates to a custody battle. But we want to talk about the stress emotionally, relationally on your family, how you position your heart in such a way that you're ready to endure the battle, get through the battle, come through on the other side of the battle. And I want to start with this quote, Rachel, in your book, Having Courage in Your Custody Battle, you say, one of the most mentally, emotionally, and physically exhausting experiences I have had was going to court and fighting for custody of two of my seven children. Would you just unpack that for us? That's quite a statement.
You know, there are a lot of things that we experience in life, and the fight for something that you honestly feel totally belongs to you, and you go into the situation thinking one thing, that we're going to work together, we're going to work this thing out, it's a simple fix, it's going to be something really simple, and you find out that now you're fighting for something that should be able to be easily worked out between two adults. And now you're living with this battle going on, and you're still having to live through everyday life until that court date or until that next encounter or experience happens. It's a lot.
It sounds like you're saying it's just all-consuming. It's with you all the time.
Very, very. It's with you all the time. You're looking at your phone, checking emails, feeling like you have to respond to every email. You're walking on eggshells in conversations, trying to continue to consider the motives behind engagements and conversations and interactions that happen. And you almost feel as if you can't live until the process is over.
Wow. Wow. Okay, we're going to get into some of the details of your story in just a minute. But Willie, I want to turn to you because you've walked through your own battle. Did it feel all-consuming to you as well?
I would say my situation was a little different. I mean, it was definitely a stressful situation just because of the stressors that it actually put on on the kids. My kids, of course, are older. The situation, of course, was different where I'm widowed. So my first wife was passed, so their mother was not here. And so the custody battle I experienced was dealing with other outside influences or other family members from my previous wife's side. And so that was just challenging going through that, trying to figure out how do I navigate it? How do I navigate the relationship at the time with them, just because there was so many divisive conversations that were going on. So I felt I had to kind of step in and separate, do a separation temporarily while we're going through that process. And that part of it was really stressful.
Okay, so tell us a little bit of the background there. So you were widowed and your former in-laws were suing for custody. Is that right?
Yes. And so there was a little stressful relationship there. But before I actually got the summons in the mail, we literally were on the phone laughing, talking, and I got a summons maybe like 3 weeks later. It was no heads up, like, hey, I didn't know why I got a summons. I didn't know that there was some opinions there that wasn't similar to our household, that there were some things that wasn't that they thought were they didn't like, basically, if I could put it in a simple way. So the conversations that was going on between them and the children was, again, it was divisive. It was a lot of division being sold there. And so we would have different conversations with the kids. And as I saw that, I had to kind of separate the relationship to a certain extent. I didn't want to cut it off, but I kind of got blindsided. I got caught totally off guard. And I was upset about that part of it because I knew our relationship was better than that. Well, I thought it was. And so when I got the summons in the mail, the reason mine wasn't as all consuming was because it was kind of a more simpler process. It's harder to take a biological parent's children from them if you're not another biological parent. Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, I was able to get an attorney and go through the process of it. And the magistrate was, she actually talked to my in-law and said, hey, what's going on here? What is this something you couldn't talk to him about? Why are you doing this? And what's the process? And asked a ton of questions and said, you know, you're going to have to jump through all these hoops. Do you want to move forward with this? And they gracefully bowed out and said, well, you know what? This is why I did it. And I don't want to continue. But it still took time. It took money. I had to hire an attorney. It was unnecessary.
Yeah. And it sounds like there was definitely some mystery in it for you, especially when you first found out about it. You know, here you go from we're having good communication to where's this coming from? I don't know what's behind this.
Right.
And that certainly adds stress to the equation. Same thing with you, Rachel. I mean, there was a mystery behind yours. You write about in your book how you go to court one day thinking you're going to fine-tune the parenting plan and then discover there's no agreement to the parenting plan. We've got a full-out battle on our hands.
Exactly. And honestly, what I felt like made it so challenging was that I didn't know anyone else that had ever been through it. So where, you know, some life challenges, you can call someone who's been through the situation before, kind of give you some wisdom. I knew no one and I didn't even know where to begin. I had no clue where to begin. And as I share in the book, I was in the middle of downtown Cleveland. There was the Cavs had won. I was literally stuck downtown for like 6 hours. It was probably close to one of the worst days because I didn't have anywhere to go. I didn't have anyone to go to because of the parade downtown. I couldn't even talk to my attorney because all the cell phone towers were being used up. It was very, very difficult. So that was my only point to go to was my attorney. He was unavailable at the time, but when I did get on the phone with him, it was just a real short conversation. He was like, I'm surprised. I'm shocked. This is going to cost a lot of money. And the phone died.
Wow. So the process is intimidating, and here you are stuck not being able to get good communication or know what to do about it. Okay, so we started off talking about the stress that's involved with this. I want us to just walk through a little list here of things that I can imagine are stressful, not in every situation for people that are listening to us right now, but these may be things that you can relate to on some level. So at the top of the list, I would imagine our listener is going, yeah, I'm worried about my kids. I'm worried about their well-being. I'm worried about, there's a reason. For both of you, it was the other who came and initiated the custody battle. We may have listeners who it was their decision to initiate the change or go back to court for whatever reason. But even then, no matter who initiated it, you're thinking about your children. There's a reason this is happening, and you want to try to protect them and be with them, and there's an outcome you're looking for in this process, or you're hoping to guard their hearts during the process of court. And just talk around that a little bit. What were some of the stressors for you guys that you faced regarding your kids?
For me, it was really knowing how much information to share and how much not to share. There came a point where a GAL, guardian ad litem, did have to get involved, which my preference was, okay, we can just deal with this between the two of us. But when it got to that point, it almost had to be something that they had become aware of. But even in that dynamic, you still can't give a lot of opinion. You still can't share a lot. So it was really trying to put them at ease through the process as much as possible.
Yeah, and how do you do that when you really can't be completely honest about facts and details and you're trying to guard them from something? So I imagine you feel divided.
You definitely do. I think for me, it was trying to give them permission to be kids through the process. So one of the things I let them know and I would say is, you know what, today we're just going to focus on today. Go play outside. There are some things that you don't have to worry about. And trying to just kind of release them from the pressure of some of the things that may have been being said or questions that they were being asked. When it did come time for them, I really just encouraged them to speak truth. That's your only responsibility, is to speak truth. That's it. But I think one of the key things was really kind of being that place of rest for them and giving them permission to live their life, however that was for them, and not to feel that they couldn't love me fully and they couldn't love my ex fully. It's just allowing them to live their life fully.
Ryan, one of the things that Rachel would say to the kids is, even if there was things that she didn't want to fully talk to them about, she would just let them know. She would say, hey, I just need you to trust me. I need you to trust me. Have I let you down? I need you to trust me in this. I'm not. And it wasn't that she would not be honest with them. She would just tell them, hey, there are certain things that at this point you don't need to be aware of. Until I have all the details, until I'm fully aware and I know that you need to know, then I'll share that with you. And I just need you to trust me through the process.
Right. Approximately how old were your children when you were going through this?
I want to say they were maybe 7 or 8 and 10.
Okay. Okay.
So
they were still relatively young. I just want to commend you for making that decision to say, I'm going to guard them from details. Because I've seen so many people, especially when they're in your shoes, the other parent initiated the battle. Sometimes people feel this right or privilege to say, well, you brought this on, so I'm telling the kids what you're doing. Like, I have the moral high ground here, so therefore I get to gossip about you behind your back to your own children. That is not the way to go, is it?
Right. I'm always very sensitive to be mindful of the conversation that I have with my kids and how I approach that situation. Because at the end of the day, the way that I feel about the person, I don't want to force that feeling on them. I want them to always have the best perspective I'm able to give them, no matter what's going on here, because whatever needs to be found out, they'll learn in due time as it's time for them to know that information. So I'm always really sensitive with that.
Yeah. One of my little tips that I would add in for our listener is, imagine your former spouse sitting right beside your kids as you talk to them about what's going on. Well, if you do that, it will help you to measure your words. And number one, it keeps in mind the fact that the kids may go tell your former spouse everything you're about to say. So you better say it in a way that the other spouse can hear it and not be completely angered by it, or, you know, feel like you're undercutting them with the children. That's a good way to help you measure your words.
And can I say this? I feel like what tends to happen is that there's one spouse that's trying to be mindful of the words and another that's not. And you can almost get sucked into that that process if you're not careful and know your level of maturity and kind of the standard that you're held to versus the other person. You'll easily get drawn into those conversations if you're not mindful and aware that this can happen and how you're going to be proactive in responding to it.
it's almost like there's a big black hole and it just suck the worst right. of you right into that whole thing right. and you can be taken under by it. Okay, so worried about your kids, of course. Time with your child. So the whole point of the custody battle is has to do with parenting and visitation schedules and who's going to spend time with the kids. And certainly there's an outcome that you would like to see happen there. What were some of the concerns that you guys had while you were going through the process and you weren't sure how your time with your kids would end up?
Well, first, let me say, I think that that in itself is very scary. You know, when you're looking at everything that's laid out in front of you, what the potential is, but you have to find that place of peace, which is what I had to do. I had to really find the place of peace that whatever the outcome was, and I kind of share this in the book, is something I would share with my kids when the conversation did come up and for myself. Whatever the outcome may be, it was gonna be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, as parents, I think that in our minds, we tend to think of the worst possible outcome. And we see in front of us this paperwork, this documentation that's really presenting that to us. But really, we have to position ourselves to say, okay, how would I navigate this specific thing if then? And then kind of gauge that conversation with our children.
So one of the things you got to do is manage your anxiety about that, your worry, and not let it get the best of you. Because if it gets the best of you, then you're going to pass that worry right on to your kids.
Right.
Exactly. That's exactly what will happen. And your kids are just so smart, and they really, really pay attention to each child and each parent. And when they're looking, they can tell when there's something off. And so we just have to be mindful. And what I had to do was just be mindful of how I was presenting myself, how I was preparing my day to still parenting well through the process.
I think that's one of the most challenging parts, though. That's one of the most challenging things to do is to let go of the stress. Because even when you think you've let it go, there's that little bit of stress in the background that subconsciously, while you're doing something triggers it. While you're cooking, while you're cleaning, anything, and then an email comes in and it triggers, and you like, I thought I gave this over. I thought I set this down and not worry about it. So one thing that my wife would say, she got to a point where she said, okay, I need to go with the 80-20 rule. I need to spend 80% of my time focus on the things that I need to focus on for today. And I'm going to commit 20% of my time to focusing on the custody issues, whether it's reading an email, sending an email, whatever it is, I got 20% of my time can go to that, and the other 80% I need to focus on my family and everything else.
So you were regulating yourself so that you wouldn't get obsessive about this.
Exactly. I absolutely had to, because what would happen is my day would be going smooth, everything was fine, and then I would get an email. And the email would throw my entire day off. My stomach would start turning, and the shift in the house that would take place just from that. So I had to say, okay, out of 24 hours and however many hours I'm woke, 80% goes to my family, goes to life, to living life, and 20%, whether it's a email response, reading something over and over, because everyone has done it. They read something and they read it and they read it and they read it. Or if it's having a conversation with a friend on the phone, all that's lumped into my 20%. That's all that I can do. And once my 20% is over, it's done.
I know one of the other tools you fell back on, and you write about it in your book, Having Courage in Your Custody Battle, is prayer and just your conversation yes. and relationship with the Lord, to constantly be putting it before Him and trying to lay it down.
Absolutely. One of the strongest things I did was I started reading Psalms, and I allowed those to be the words of prayer that were spoken on my behalf. And so I would put my name in there. I would put, you know, my ex's name in there. I would put anyone that was involved in the process. And I literally read the Psalm 1 all the way through, and until I felt a transformation happened. And one of the biggest transformations that happened was I felt allowed to be frustrated, angry, and still know how to honor God. So if you know all about the Psalms, we know that David will be frustrated, angry, but say, but still I worship you, still I praise you, you are still yet faithful. But he will still verbalize, why is my enemy getting away with this? Why is he able to do this? You know, and it taught me how to go before the throne and really speak my heart to God, but also recognize that even though I'm feeling this way, you are all sovereign. You know everything that's going to take place, and go to Him from that place.
We're walking through some of the stressors that people experience in custody battles. I gotta mention a couple more, the financial one. Attorneys are not cheap.
You're right. Just like I said at the beginning, the first thing he told me was, this is going to be expensive.
Yes.
And it definitely was. And that honestly is, I think, one of the greatest challenges, because you're trying to balance that. You never know what the fees are going to be if you have a GAL that gets involved. You're paying for two, three attorneys and still not knowing the outcome.
And then you go through the process of not knowing if on the other end, the other attorney is fighting you. And of course, in a lot of cases, and we've heard this from a lot of other couples that are going through this, is the attorney that's for the ex wants their fees paid by you. They're like, oh, we're going to motion for you to cover our fees. You got to cover your fees. Now I have somebody said I need to cover their fees. Right. And then we may go through multiple attorneys, just depending on the circumstances, and you going back and forth. So yeah, it can be very stressful.
Extremely. Court demands, time away from work. You got to go for this. You got to appear for that. You got to be a part of this meeting. You got to show up, you know, this place, this time. All of that pulls on your time demands and influences work. And depending on your work environment, your income.
Right, right, absolutely. And one of the things I had to remind myself often through the process, and I would listen to songs about it, is this too shall pass.
Mm.
And I would intentionally have, through the process of just finding community, I was able to engage with someone that had been through it. And so I was able to see myself through it. And then I actually became friends with someone that was going through it. So we walked through it together. And those two things were just amazing, because it helped me to know that I wasn't alone and that there was life on the other side of it. So that was definitely helpful. And they had experienced the financial aspect of it and all of those things. And I was either walking through it with the person that was going through the financial aspect of it, or I would call my friend who had been through it, and she would be able to speak encouraging words to me for that.
Yeah, that's great to have somebody who's in support, kind of outside of the equation a little bit, but trying to come along and stand beside you. I want to come back to that later in our conversation, because I think that's really important. One other thing that I'm mindful of is parent and step-parent maybe having disagreements about how to handle the whole process. Now, you guys are in a unique situation in that each of you is a parent who went through a custody battle and a step-parent to the other's kids while they were going through a custody battle.
Yes.
Right.
So let's talk around that for a minute. What if the biological parent is got a path and they are fighting for their kids, or they're highly motivated in a particular direction, but the step-parent maybe doesn't see it the same or thinks that maybe you should be handled a little differently? That's now adding stress on your usness.
Right.
Absolutely.
It's adding stress on the marriage. So, yeah, that's a good one,
I see,
Ryan,
you guys smiling a little bit. Something tells me this hits home.
That's a reality for us right there. I mean, especially, it is different factors. I know discipline is a major factor that can take place. And we talk about that in the supporting your, how to support your spouse through custody battle book.
Yeah.
Where the parent that's going through the custody battle is walking on eggshells to a certain extent. Well, this is in our situation. For me, Rachel was walking on eggshells. I was feeling that my house was being controlled by a circumstance, because if the children were out of line and I felt that a firmer discipline was needed, and she taking into perspective all the factors and the fact that she had to go to court the next week, or that they were going for a visitation the next week or something like that, she wanted me to respond differently. At one point I didn't understand all that. I just got frustrated. I'm like, well, that's not okay for them to be running my house, because I'm the head of the house, so I need to set the discipline that needs to be set. But over time, after I took it to God, I had to pray through this process, because it was hard. It was very challenging. And there was even a moment where we literally talked maybe the day before, a couple of days before, about taking new steps towards discipline or whatever. And then I still kind of just reverted back to the old discipline of yelling and saying, hey, and given the consequence that really didn't match up with the action, but hey, just go to your room, or no more basketball, no, put that up, PlayStation, I would take five things away. And so she would get upset, I would get upset, So now we have the kids they're caught in the middle, and then we have our marriage that's kind of getting torn apart by this custody battle as well.
It's one thing to have a disagreement about how you should handle a parenting situation. It's another thing to add to it. This has implication for the custody thing that we're having to do next week.
Like, right.
All of a sudden, it feels a whole lot heavier than just about what's going on with the two of you.
Right, because then it could seem like, oh, it's just a minor response. But then in the back of my head, it's like, but then what if this is said that, oh, you took this away and this, that, and other. And it almost is like, what if that creates more fuel and gives more incentive? And so it's really about being sensitive to the parenting hesitancies that person is going through. But even more so, you know, we always talk about discipline as discipleship.
Right.
So really, that is like a critical time to understand the importance of discipling through the process, because whether you're going through a custody battle or not, that should always be the structure that, we feel that it should always be the structure that you kind of discipline from, is from a discipleship aspect where you're really thinking through the process of it. Mm-hmm. But just in those moments, it really intensifies.
Yes.
So even if he were to be doing it that way, because of how on eggshells I felt, I'm like, no, that's not it. But just being sensitive to those parenting hesitancies.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So Willie, I cut you off.
No.
I got to have you go back and finish that. So you didn't see it the way she saw it at first. You didn't quite feel the weight of that.
I didn't.
So what had to change for you? What shifted inside you? What was that process like?
So it was a combination of me going to God in reference to just how do I handle this? Because I will find myself get really frustrated, and I didn't want to get frustrated about it. I wanted to be the hero for her in any situation that there was. But I also found myself being frustrated when we didn't agree, or maybe when she didn't agree with me. It was more of a pride thing. So I had to die to flesh in that sense. But also even having a conversation with her and her saying, "Hey, listen," and this is us having a conversation. Not when we're kind of heated and having heat. We call it heated fellowship. We don't call it argument.
Yeah.
So when we're not having heated fellowship, we would maybe out to dinner or maybe sitting down just talking. She said to me one day, you're not the one that has to go in the courtroom. I have to go in the courtroom by myself. And then you know what I have to do? I have to explain to them why I made a decision, but also why you made a decision. So I have to defend both me and you, and you're not in the courtroom with me to help me do that. And so when I thought about it from that perspective, why do I want to keep putting her in a position to have to do that? I want to be the hero. And so I don't want to put her in a position where she has to defend both me and her by herself.
That's good. I appreciate you kind of wrestling with that part of you that wanted to be right and seeing it from a little bit different perspective. I think that's an awesome moment. We all have our point of view about how things should go. And sometimes we need to take in a little bit more information and see it from a different point of view. And sometimes that's just going to call for some change within us if we're not willing to do that.
And it doesn't happen overnight either, right? Yeah. It took me a long time. Like when it came to us and having disagreements, and we didn't have them a lot. We didn't have them often, but still it took me a while. It took me some years to get past the pride thing and the discipline thing. I was looking back. I was like, man, it took at least like 2 or 3 years, like just working through it. But God was working on my heart through the whole process. So I just don't want people to feel like they got to do it immediately.
I think Rachel's saying maybe it took 3 or 4 years or 5 years or 6 years. Way too long, right?
Right. Multiply that times two.
Yeah.
Right.
So what we're saying to the listener here is, yeah, there's going to be some adjustments in your marriage relationship even as you face this custody battle. Like, you got to strive for oneness in the midst of it.
Absolutely.
Because if you're not careful, that stress that started with the custody battle becomes something that divides and conquers the two of you.
Right.
Yes.
You know, one of the other items that I had on my list, Rachel, about stressors was parenting. And we've just already stumbled down that road to talk about how parenting changes. And, you know, one of the sensitivities that I think we have is in the midst of stress, in particular, if a parenting moment you think has implication for the outcome of the custody battle, it changes the way you parent. You can get paralyzed. You can modify yourself. You can maybe get picky on each other about how the other is parenting. Yeah, I mean, those things you can relate to.
Absolutely, and I think going back to what Willie said, it's about that communication aspect of it and just being honest and upfront and knowing, you know, where you may kind of have more of a challenge with it, but being sensitive to the other person and where they're at with the parenting. I know for me, I found that I wanted to constantly be mindful of how I parented, even to an even greater degree, not necessarily just from the negative, but also from the positive, where I kind of would find myself pulling back from parenting because of the stressor. So trying to re-engage myself in the parenting process, because when you feel like everything can or will be used against you, it's hard to parent, you know?
Yeah.
It's really hard to parent. You're like, okay, this person didn't do what they needed to do in school. I'm going to put them on punishment, but they're children. So children sometimes like to manipulate the situation.
Really? So, wait, I got to stop you right there. This is really, does this happen?
It absolutely does.
Yes, it does happen. I'm being so sarcastic right now.
I know.
I mean, the reason I'm being sarcastic is because sometimes we think our precious little ones will never do this sort of stuff. And
right.
Everybody listening right now needs to know better. Okay.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
They
keep
see
going.
A situation. They see a situation that they can find some kind of wiggle room in, and they'll utilize that situation. So a simple, okay, you're going to be in your room because you didn't do X, Y, and Z can become, I hate living in this house, da, 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 da. And it can kind of totally shift everything, and words are being used against you and things like that. So just parenting from that perspective and knowing that can be challenging for however long you're going through it, because you constantly are parenting from this place of anything can and will be used against you.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think I'm doing well, I can later find out that I wasn't, or what I think I did right, they may not think it's right. So it's a very uncomfortable season of parenting.
Yeah, so you're putting pressure on yourself to get it right, because everything seems to have implication for the custody battle, and kids will
yes.
take advantage of that. Could the two of you speak to that person who's listening right now who has a child who is totally using this added power in their family to have one up on mom and dad? Like they, you know, and kids will learn this too, or at least somebody in the home will figure out, I can get away with stuff. All I have to do is threaten to tell the other house or something. And now I've got one up on my parent. What should somebody do if that's their situation?
One of the things I would consider is really having conversations with your children about basically your moral compass. What is guiding you?
Hmm.
And having that conversation with them about really understanding their character. Do you want to have a character where you're not being honest? Do you want that to be a part of who you become and who people say that you are? One of the examples I use when I was a teacher was the concept of respect, because people will say, well, if this person respects me, I'll respect them. I'm like, well, that means that you're not a respectful person, because that shouldn't change just because you go from one place to the other. If I'm a respectful person, even if I am not being respected, what's in me is respect. So that's what's always going to come out of me. So it's about having that conversation with them, where you literally take time to talk about, who do you want to be known as? How do you want people to see you? Because when you go from one place to the other, it seems to shift a little bit. You're not being honest. Your words are, you know, seeming like they're not to help to build. Of course, in a childlike way, you have this conversation with them. And I had to do this even with my own children over time with different scenarios to really help them learn who you are is who you will become. And let's work on that character so that when the rules change, you don't feel like you have to change because the rules change, because what's ingrained in you is who you want to be known as.
That is a good
right.
word. That is a good word. And that's a long-term journey for us in parenting. Right?
Yes.
Yep. Nothing quick and fast and easy about that one, but to maintain that sort of approach throughout the process would be good.
Right. And you know, the thing about the process is that it highlights what may need to be worked on. So if you see that going on with your child, all it is highlighting a character flaw that as parents, we're supposed to speak into and teach them the right way. And I've had that, we've had that conversation with our children where we saw a character flaw, and the best way I could say it is, you're being two-faced,
mm-hmm.
and we need to work on that.
Mm-hmm,
you
right.
know, that what you say, you don't want to say one thing about a person one place and then one thing about a person another place. So we had that conversation and it really helped to transform it, because we let them know that it's not just affecting what you're doing in the home, but you'll become that way with your friends, and your friends aren't going to like that too much. So when they see how it affects the whole, it's a little bit easier to have that conversation.
Yeah. And Ryan, I think one other thing to add to that is as a couple, you guys have to communicate with each other, because when you're, because again, that process does take time. So when you're in the fire, you guys have to communicate to know how to respond and how you're going to parent in the immediacy of things. So if there's a custody battle going on, then you have that communication. So you can say, okay, well, yeah, we're not going to, we're not going to do this. We're not going to discipline in this way, because I don't want to open up the opportunity for them to be able to say, well, this X, Y, Z happened. And so if you guys have that communication, you can kind of strategizing, if that, if that makes any sense, so that you can protect your marriage, you can protect your household. And then you also have a conversation too, because there were times where we were looking at, even when the two-face thing was going on to a certain extent, we were looking at it as, oh, this is what this person is thinking about me, or we don't want this person thinking this about, I don't want this person thinking this about my wife. She don't want them thinking about her. But we had to get to a place also where we communicated with each other. We set a standard for our household, and we know that those that are close to us, those that know our dynamic and know our characteristics, that they know that some of that outside stuff that's, or that jargon that's being said, or whatever's being said about us, is not true. And so the ones that choose to believe it, they're going to choose to believe it because that's what they want to believe, because they have a different perspective of us, and their perspective may not be true. Their perspective is their reality, but it's not what's going on in our household necessarily. So
that's a good word. You know, another stressor that I'm mindful of is the hit. I'll say it this way: the hit that the step-parent, step-child relationship can take through the custody battle. I'm imagining a situation where the biological father in the other household is kind of pulling on the heartstrings of the children. He's saying things, making comments about mom and also stepdad, and the kids are carrying that with them when they come over and they're in stepdad's house. And it's just getting in the way. It's holding their heart from being able to be open to him. And maybe things were pretty good, and now they've kind of backed up and they get a little more withdrawn and they're not engaging with him like they used to. And he's feeling that rejection, or he doesn't know how to make sense of it. And I could just see how that becomes more delicate through a custody battle situation. Did you guys go through that? And even if you didn't, I mean, what words would you offer? What encouragement would you offer a step parent going through that?
I mean, I would say that is a delicate situation. So you have to, delicate things, you have to handle them in a delicate manner. So with that being said, it's all about relationship building. And the way you respond to a situation is how you're going to teach the children to respond, or you're either going to confirm something that they're already thinking or something they're being told. So if they're being told these bad things, then you don't want to come off in a defensive manner to where they don't want to share things with you. You want to say, hey, you want them to feel open to share with you just free-handedly. And you can say, hey, that's okay. I mean, I understand that. And then you don't necessarily want to respond back by saying, well, they said that. Well, this is what's going on. This is the truth of the matter. Like, no, what we do is we respond in love and we tell them, okay, that's okay. They're probably saying that because there could be some hurt. There could be some anger. I understand they're upset. But I want you to know that's not necessarily true. That's not the full story. And you either can share some of the story with them in love and in truth, or you can say, hey, again, at this point in time, it's not a really good time. You're too young for me to explain all this stuff to you, but I will explain it to you one day. But for right now, I just want you to trust me and keep building a relationship with them. So,
and I would definitely say one of the things that came to my mind was consistency.
Yep.
And as challenging as it can be when you may be being mistreated, or you're not shown any appreciation for things, or you're just kind of dismissed, still being consistent in areas that you know the child still needs you is key. And so when the child is wrestling through these different emotions, because really what it is it's about loyalty. And the child feels that they need to be loyal to this parent. Yeah. In order for them to be loyal to this parent, they have to not accept this other parent. But really, when it all boils down to it, as the child becomes older, what they will appreciate is the consistency, even in their wavering place. So while this custody battle was going on, just remaining consistent with those things that may be a little bit challenging to process through.
You know, in my experience, one of the things that's going on with kids, in addition to what you guys have just said, which is absolutely correct, is they're confused. Like, they know what's going on and they know what's at stake. And there's something inside them that doesn't want to make it worse. So it's kind of like, of all the possibilities, I'm just going to take the path of least resistance. I don't want to stir the waters. I don't want to make it worse. And that can appear to parent and step-parent as being rejection or withdrawn or, oh, they're siding with the other household in the battle against us. Like, oh, and, right. And more often than not, my experience is that is not what the kids are doing. They're just trying to lay low.
Right.
Right. And honestly, what I found too with the children, and this is in all areas ever that I've noticed, not just with custody battles, but period, they tend to kind of flock toward the parent that they're a little bit more, I guess the word is intimidated, or just a little bit more like, this parent may not accept me later if I don't kind of give into this process. But there's always a parent, I feel, that is like, no matter what, I'm still going to love you. The child is paying attention to the potential rejection that can take place.
Right.
And they're paying attention to what parent is going to be present no matter what. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that parent that's going to be present no matter what, they kind of have a safety zone there. So they're like, okay, I can kind of push back a little bit there, give them all that, because even when I'm ready to return fully, they'll be there. And that kind of hurts to be that parent. But that's how a child processes things, to not have to feel rejection.
In other words, it's a backwards compliment sometimes when you get more stuff from the kids. It's kind of like their way of saying, yeah, I trust you. I'm safe with you. And I can dish this out. And so while it may not be fun to experience, it is a little bit of a testimony to your relationship with them.
Exactly, yes.
So let's talk a little bit about coping now. We've laid out a bunch of stressors, and we've talked around coping a little bit. We've already talked about the importance of prayer and kind of guarding your heart and constantly taking your anxiety and this whole process to the Lord. There's something else that you talk about, Rachel, in your book, and it's you talk about listening to God in the battle. And I remember you talking about check your heart, check your heart. Do you mind talking around that? What does that mean?
So in order for us to really hear what God is saying and to get insight and honestly to just experience his peace, we really have to have a heart that is not bitter towards the process and toward the person. And that is a pure heart is where he can come in and he can allow his peace to come in and he can allow our ears to be open to hearing his voice and to hearing what he may be saying in the situation. And it's so easy when people are saying negative things about us, when they're spewing out lies or spewing out deception, they're doing whatever it takes for them to get what they want, to go to this place of just bitterness and anger and hatred that this is even happening. Why would you do such a thing? You've already done enough, and now you're putting the cherry on top with trying to take me to court. And we have to allow ourselves to walk in forgiveness, because we don't have room for bitterness when we're really trying to pursue the victory, so to speak. And I talk a little bit about what victory is in my book, and it's not always what we think and what we see it as, but victory nonetheless, where God is being glorified in the situation. He can only be glorified when bitter roots aren't present, because then we're open to hear what it looks like for him to be glorified through the situation. So it's challenging, and I'm not going to say that it's easy, because it's not. And there's days that you may succeed at it more than others, but there's always that laying down of self and laying down of my right to be angry and my right to be upset in this situation, to pick up what he wants to do the exchange for. Mm.
You know, as I read that part of your book and as I was listening to you talk right now, I was just thinking about Matthew chapter 5 and the Sermon on the Mount. And there's a passage there where Jesus is talking about, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you, and he's talking around these themes. And it's interesting to me that divorce is one of the things he talks about, and people's attitudes towards their spouse, and how people were putting away their wives and their husbands far too easily. And he's calling them back to keep their promises. But what's around that little section about divorce is anger. Guard your heart against anger. Oaths and breaking a promise, right? Then he's talking about retaliation. You've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, don't resist one who is evil. But, you know, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. In other words, be long-suffering in difficult circumstances. And then he culminates that whole process by talking about love. You've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. And wouldn't that be a great mantra when you're going through a court battle?
Absolutely.
You have permission to hate your former spouse in this situation. But then he says, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you.
Yes.
It's like this culmination of this passage on anger and divorce and breaking promises and retaliation is love. Even the people that are the most difficult to love. And what I hear you saying is, what a challenge in the midst of highly stressful, difficult circumstances, but to check your heart, to constantly be going back to the Lord and saying, all right, how do I love in this situation? Doesn't mean I'm a doormat. It doesn't mean I don't fight if there's something serious to fight about in this situation. It doesn't mean we don't stand up for what's right. It doesn't mean any of that, but I do so with a measure of grace and mercy and godliness and fairness, and I need to be looking out for what's best for the kids, not just what's best for me.
Right.
And I don't just do something negative towards my former spouse just because this whole court thing has happened or because of the past of our relationship. Like, I got to set all that aside and be decent.
Exactly. And, you know, it's so interesting because I mentor people that have gone through this process. And one of the things I tell them to do is check their motives and what they're asking for.
Mm.
You know, sometimes we ask for things in this court thing just because, well, you laid all this out for me. And so now I want this, 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 and this. And we're fighting and we're fighting and we're tying ourselves out. When really, when we check our motive and we ask God, what is it really that I need? What are you really requiring me? Because these are your children who you have called me to disciple. What does that look like for me to do that for you? And when we begin to do that, we actually sit and realize, like, you know what? Maybe everything that I'm trying to pursue, part of the reason that I'm getting such kickback is maybe it's not God's intention for me to go for A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. Maybe I'm just supposed to ask for A, B, and C. And the rest of it is me just feeling entitled to it.
Mm. Right.
And a lot of entitlement tends to go into the process. And when entitlement is present, love can't be. And we have to kind of do that exchange. I always talk about the exchange. To go and do that exchange when it comes to I'm feeling entitled versus, you know, I'm feeling like I want to pursue love. And one of the most difficult things to do is to speak blessings over that person through the process. It's challenging. I'm not going to lie. It's challenging, but it's transformational to your heart motives. Because when you're doing that, what can happen over time is you begin to see, well, maybe this is the reason why they're doing that. Maybe this is this. And maybe they're still in this place. And it shifts your perspective and your view of things.
This goes back to something you said earlier that I wrote down. Bitterness closes your heart. And you're saying it closes your perspective. It closes your posture about what you're trying to accomplish objectively in this court battle or responding to what has been thrust upon you. And bitterness will skew you to the point where you're now retaliating. You're now entitled. You're now trying to get what you can get out of this whole thing rather than having that objective point of view that says, well, what's best for the kids? What's fair? What's decent? Even if the other person is not being decent, how do I maintain civility in the midst of this battle?
Exactly. And I tell people, we're Christians, we're not cowards.
Mm-hmm.
So we have access to God, who is all seeing, all knowing. He's the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and he will fight our battles for us. But ultimately, the outcome that he has is not always one that we're going to look and say, yes, I felt victory as the world would see it. But victory so often in Christ almost looks like a defeat to other people. And you're like, why would you? But because he knows the end from the beginning, then sometimes us saying yes to something is because later on, and we feel this nudge, and I've had people tell me like, well, everyone told me I should do this, you know, but I feel like I should do that. And what is your heart telling you? What is the truth of God speaking into you? And that is victory for you when you have followed what God has orchestrated and told you to do. And he is glorified in it through you through this situation. It's not always about I got everything I want out of it.
Yeah.
But did I walk away with a pure heart? Did I walk away showing love? And did I stand in a position of peace and calm in the courtroom? How did I represent Christ in that moment?
Yeah, and I just want to add just the prerequisite to that. The key to that is also just being intimate with God. Like we can say, like, well, my heart is telling me this. but is your heart pure? Like you won't know, because your heart, as you get intimate with God, our hearts align with His, and then His desires become our desires. And then we see the fruit of what comes out of it, which is goodness. And so unless we are being intimate with Him, then we may not know what our heart, we may not know our true heart motives, if that makes any sense, or our hearts may not have pure motives, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. So we don't want to just say, oh yeah, my heart says that I should have the custody and he shouldn't or she shouldn't. So I just want to put that prerequisite out there.
Yeah. No, that's excellent. And I think the beauty of that is you're caring well for your children if you have God's desires in your heart.
Right.
Because His desires for your situation will lead you to a place where ultimately your kids win. Like here's an incredible right. challenge for anybody going through a custody battle. Do whatever you can throughout this process so that your co-parenting relationship with your former spouse is better on the back end. Not worse.
Right.
I mean, that's the challenge. Keep that perspective in mind as you go through. I'm trying to work towards a better relationship, not a worse one. And by the way, when you were talking about people say, well, somebody told me to do this or ask for that or demand this, often that's an attorney mm-hmm. who is trying to help you be more adversarial. And sometimes I think we encourage have to say to the attorney, no. That's not decent and fair. That's not reasonable. That's not helpful for my kids long term. We're going for this, not that.
Right.
And so even dialing back your attorney is a process. I know that's what they get paid to do. You know, the whole judicial system is adversarial in nature, and it pulls the worst out of people.
Right.
To go in there with that heart that you talked about so beautifully, I think is just fantastic. Do you have any thoughts on kids and testifying in court? Now, I want to believe that judges are really apprehensive about putting kids on the stand, and I want to believe that they won't do that unless there's compelling reason to do that, but I know that's not always the case. What kind of things should people think through before putting their kids on the stand?
I think you want to think through the effect of that. Because you're putting your kids in a position where they have to basically choose between, if it depending on how you present it, but if you're putting them in the position where they have to choose between one parent or the other, or they feel they have to choose between one parent or the other, I think if they're in that situation because of the other parent is just demanding it and the magistrate or the judge feels that needs to happen, then as the parent that wants the best for the child, you should be cautious in how you just engage them and just really just telling them, hey, when you go up there, you speak truth. Try to take that burden off of them. Mm-hmm. Try to take that burden off and say, hey, whatever you feel, and even having a conversation with them. And my thought process through it is that as you have built relationship over time, that they're going to share some of that stuff with you anyway. Like you'll have the relationship to the point where you are able to say, hey, well, how are you feeling through this? I don't want you to feel pressured to say anything for me that you feel like you have to defend me or you feel like you have to defend your mom or your dad or the other parent. You go up there and you say what's on your heart. Right. You say what's true. You say what you feel. And so,
right. That's what I was going to say with some people that I've talked to is release the child from feeling like they have to defend you.
Right.
And encourage them to speak truth. The truth you can't go wrong with. So in any time, whether they're going in front of the judge or the magistrate or they have to go talk to a GAL, just answer the question truthfully. You know, listen to that little gut feeling that you get and allow that to guide you, because at the end of the day, you don't want to walk away feeling the yucky feeling. I call it the yucky feelings to my kids so that they'll know, because they know what the yucky feeling feels like. We know that is, you know, the Holy Spirit, that's just discernment, that's all of that going on. But for them, it's the yucky feeling. And I just encourage them, like, pay attention to that yucky feeling. And you don't want to feel that when you walk away. So whatever the truth is, just tell the truth.
Yeah. I think that is a good word. You're supporting them in that sense. Speaking of support, let's land the plane here. I think anybody going through a custody battle needs as many support systems as they can get. And so
absolutely.
Let's talk around this. I'm thinking, how does the step-parent support the biological parent? I'm wondering about support systems outside your home, maybe extended family. And then I'm also specifically wondering about the church. How can churches support families going through this. So step parents, how can they be supportive? How can you line up a support system of friends or extended family? What might that look like? And then what can churches do?
I think as far as for step parents, the biggest thing, again, goes back to communication and to, like in my situation, dying to pride or being willing to lay down my desires and my wants for hers. So if there's something that she says, hey, I think we should, can we try it this way? Then we can have a conversation about that. But even me, if it's not going against anything, which she wouldn't ask me to go against anything God is saying, or if it's nothing that's crazy, then yeah, let's try that. Why not? I mean, because what's the harm in it, so that she feels comfortable and so that we can move forward and she doesn't feel that she has to go into her custody battle and she has to, again, defend me or defend herself because of a decision that I made as a step-parent.
It just occurs to me as you're saying that the last thing you want to put your wife in is a situation where she's not only battling with her former husband, but she's battling with her current husband.
Right.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. It's just making sure that you're positioning yourself. Number one, being slow to speak and quick to listen, because a lot of times when your spouse is going through that, they really need a listening ear.
Right.
And not necessarily all the answers, because they're processing through the answers. And oftentimes we talk ourselves into the answers, but also not feeling like, okay, I'm going to have to go here and battle this. But when I make this decision that I feel like is best for my children, I'm going to have to go and defend myself to my spouse.
Right.
So really having that good communication and understanding of why I need to make that decision, but allowing yourself as a spouse, I need to be comfortable coming to you with what may not make sense to you in the moment, what makes total sense to me based off of all the information that I know from being in the courtroom, talking to the attorney, hearing all of the details, because even though you're the spouse, you're still someone on the outside looking in. And it's hard to see yourself in that because it just as much affects you. It affects the whole household. But unfortunately, the decision and the person in the room is who has to live with the decision moving forward.
Right. And sometimes another thing too, as a spouse, is you can become the mediator in between. There was a time where I had to kind of step in and be the mediator, where calls or emails or anything could have come in that she was extra sensitive to, or they may have triggered something, that I would step in and be the mediator and kind of review those first, and I would process it, yes. Process them, and then I would say, okay, hey, this is something you need to look at. No, this is not something you need to look at right now.
That was so helpful.
Really?
It helped relieve the stress so much, because he would look and he would hear the tone, and the tone wouldn't offend him. The tone of the emails wouldn't offend him. They wouldn't bother him. He could read it and not read into it and just bullet point the important points. When I would read it, it was like an attack, like, "Grr."
Yes, he didn't have the same bruises that you have.
Exactly.
So when he didn't read it with the same eyes or the same heart, and can respond very differently. That's a wonderful idea. How about extended family and friends, and like, how, you know, what are the do's and don'ts? Because I would think sometimes you want to pull those people in and go, hey, look, can I just get together with you once every couple of weeks and just, you know, bleed all over the place, because I just need to vent and then I can go home and not have to take that out on my spouse or my kids. But at the same time, you may not want to do that with certain people. So what are your thoughts there?
So one thing that I would say is just being mindful of the people who haven't been through it, because it's just like with anything else, people have a lot of opinions to something they haven't experienced, so they don't know how it'll affect you, you know?
Yeah.
I like to say that people that tend to go through a custody battle, they don't have that much experience. For me, like, I hadn't had any experience with court except what I saw on TV on, like, divorce court or through, you know, those little those shows. And so I was terrified. And most people don't have a lot of experience with the court system in that capacity when they're presented with this. So when you're having that conversation, it's really a limited conversation that you're having. So one of the things I will look for are people that can encourage you where you're at, but most importantly, encourage you in your relationship with God, because that's where you're really going to get built up at. If you don't kind of have that boundary set, then what'll happen is you'll find yourself spewing on everyone in every single relationship, and people will back away because it's like, okay, I want to support her, but I'm kind of tired of talking about this, because they don't understand how life consuming it is. So going to a counselor and allowing that to be like your venting place. And then when you leave there, you can just be kind of, I don't want to say normal, but you can kind of engage everyone in more of a normal capacity, because you have your once a week, I'm going to go, I'm going to sit with this person, I'm going to talk to them, and I'm going to leave it there.
You've been listening to my conversation with Willie and Rachel Scott. I'm Ron Deal, and this is Family Life Blended. We'll hear one last thought from Willie and Rachel in just a minute, but before that, if this has been helpful to you, would you rate it, like right now? Why would I ask you to do that? Because it pays it forward. It helps others get the same benefit that you just received. I appreciate it. You know, at one point in our conversation, we talked about how parents are responsible to direct their attorney. That is, how their attorney acts during the custody negotiations. I just want to return to that for a minute, because in my experience, I think people, especially if you're new to the custody battle situation, most people underestimate the hostile nature of litigation. Attorneys are by nature adversarial. No offense if you are an attorney. It is their job to look out for you, to fight for you. But that doesn't always result in a balanced perspective, a cordial tone outside the courtroom, or listening ears to the other side. So please hear me on this, parents. It's your job to direct their steps, even as the Lord is directing your steps. I've heard attorneys say things like, you know, you have the right to get more than that. You really ought to go back and fight a little bit hard. You know, I'm concerned about where that leads. And I'm concerned as to whether or not that even blesses your child. You know, they say things that are about blessing you. Well, you need to keep the perspective, is this a blessing to my child? I may have the right to it, but is it a blessing? If you make that your ultimate filter, I think you're going to make better decisions. A quick little note here. I'm not talking about abusive situations. I'm not, you know, that is in a different category, and there are other things you need to consider there. But in general, the lens I want you to look through is, well, do you remember in Matthew 22 when the Pharisees are trying to trap Jesus? So they ask him, is it lawful to pay taxes? And he says, hey, look at this coin. Whose likeness do you see on it? And they say, well, it's Caesar's. And he says, okay, then render to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. All right, here's what I want you to do. Take a good look at your child. I bet you see some likeness of you and their other parent. Do not hoard that child's heart or life in selfishness. Render to your child what each parent is due so that your child may fully reflect the love of both of you. Make that your first filter, what's best for them, and other details will follow, and direct your attorney accordingly. You know, if you'd like more information about Willie and Rachel or their resource, Having Courage in Your Custody Battle, you'll find it in our show notes and on the Family Life Blended page at familylife.com/podcasts. We love hearing from you. Your feedback means a lot to us. Positive online reviews are really helpful as well. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcast. Just search Family Life Blended with Ron Deal. And remember to look at the show notes. There's additional information down there, links to resources that you may be interested in. And if you like what you're hearing, please help us spread the word. Maybe you can post something on social media, or right now, maybe you can think of a friend or a family member that you know would benefit from hearing this podcast. Send it to them and post something on social media. We'd really appreciate that. You know, at Family Life, we're always trying to help provide resources for you. Maybe you've heard that we have a new version of our video curriculum, the Smart Step Family, along with an updated participants guide for small groups. It's an all-new 8-session study, great for groups or do-it-yourself enrichment program for your blended family. You can use it either way. It's available for streaming on Right Now Media, or you can get the DVD at Amazon or at familylife.com. In addition to that, this month, I'm releasing another book in our Smart Step Family series from Bethany House Publishers. Along with my co-authors, Greg Pettis and David Edwards, we've written the Smart Step Family Guide to Financial Planning, Money Management Before and After You Blend a Family. Now, money matters divide a lot of step families. We want to help you finance togetherness. It's available wherever you buy your books. And for those of you that are interested in ministry, ministry leaders, church leaders, maybe you're a couple that just wants to pour into other couples, I want to encourage you to join us for the Summit on Step Family Ministry, October 23 to 25, 2019, in Chesapeake, Virginia. We've been doing these events for many, many years now, and we know what it does for people. It brings together like-minded people who want to know more about blessing blended family couples and helping their marriage to go the journey. We're going to help you start a ministry if you've never started one. We're going to try to help you grow your ministry if you've got one going, and you're going to network with lots of people. My guests today, Willie and Rachel Scott, will be speaking for us, and many other leaders. Again, that's October 23 to 25, 2019. You can learn more about the Summit on Step Family Ministry at summitonstepfamilies.com, or always feel free to go to familylife.com. Now, before we're done, I asked Willie and Rachel what the church community can do to help couples going through a custody battle.
One of the things I would encourage them to do is to find someone that they can direct the person to, whether it be maybe another pastor that they're connected to, or just someone that they trust. It could be a friend that, you know, they can say, here, this is someone that I know that can walk through the process with you, and maybe have that person on standby, or an organization or a community that they trust. Because what tends to happen is that people will go to their pastor, and the pastor, honestly, just, they don't know what to do to help in those situations. Most people don't know what to do to help. And they'll go to them, and they want to be able to be more of a resource, but they have no idea how to be that. And so one of the things I would encourage them to do is to not leave that as an undone place where it's like, okay, well, since it only happens every once in a while, I'm going to just leave it alone, but really have something readily available for when that time does come. They can say, here goes a resource, here goes someone I can connect you to in the event that it does happen. And then helping to create a community or finding a community that can support them in the capacity that that person may need.
Right. And I think that the biggest thing is remembering that we're not necessarily supporting someone's divorce, but we're actually supporting a person that's going through a brokenness or a broken state. And we're trying to help them to view those things because they have a filter from all the brokenness that they've been through and everything. There's a filter there. So their perspective is skewed, like we talked earlier. And so we're trying to help them see this through a godly lens so that they can handle the situation in a godly way. And so if we look at it from that perspective versus, I don't want to support this divorce thing that's going on, then I think we could be more helpful in that way.
Next time on Family Life Blended, we'll hear from my good friend Laura Petherbridge about the challenges of being a stepmom, the unique aspects of being a childless stepmom, and how it affects a stepmom when her husband doesn't do his part.
When he was not setting those boundaries for his children, it made me feel like he was being wimpy. Step up and be a dad.
That's author and stepmom Laura Petherbridge next time on Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our Family Life Legacy partners for making this podcast possible. Our chief audio engineer is Keith Lynch, Bruce Goff, our producer. And mastering engineer is Justin Adams. And theme music provided by Braden Deal. Family Life Blended is produced by Family Life. And is part of the Family Life Podcast Network.